L-E-D-E-N-E-T.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 100% match on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jeremy Fowler from ESPN will join us at high noon. Chris Mason at 1 o'clock. Right now we talk a little college football with Adam Rittenberg from ESPN. Adam, how you doing?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. You know, we had Ryan McGee on yesterday, and I'll just kind of ask you the same thing that I asked him just to get your perspective. It seems like I can ever remember a case, and so obviously we've turned a corner and with what's going on in our country, and I think it's all for the good, but I don't think we've ever seen this much power to the student athlete. I can't ever remember student athletes coming out and literally taking, you know, having a bone to pick with their head coach on social media and everything, you know, happening the way that it did. It started with Mike Norvell at Florida State. Even Dabo Swinney has certainly had to do a lot of videos and answering to what happened 3 years ago. Now enter Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State. What do you make of right now kind of the tide shifting a bit with these players and these student athletes where they've, you know, forever it felt like the cards were all stacked against them, but it doesn't feel that way today.
No, and again, I think they're seeing what's gone on in the country and how many people have taken action. And, you know, social media, it's obviously a medium that they're very familiar with. They know how to use it already, and I think they're learning how to use it effectively beyond just putting out a highlight video that the school put together for them. So, yeah, it's interesting to see where this is going to go. And, you know, I don't know if I can remember anything quite like the Chuba Hubbard situation earlier this week, but it, you know, you figure that's not the last time that we'll see a player be bold about something, maybe, you know, about a coach or about the program. We're seeing a lot of athletes being involved in changes on their campuses, whether it's the removal of statues or building names or other things that trouble them, especially the black athletes who are obviously the majority in college football. So, yeah, it's a very interesting and I would say exciting time right now, even though we don't have you know, games or anything like that are confirmed to look forward to. But it's, the activism going on among college athletes is something that I know I've talked about with people in the sport for many years. Why isn't there more? And I think we just needed certain things to happen nationally and then those guys to feel like they had the power and the courage to go out and put things out there. And that's what we're seeing right now.
Do you think Mike Gundy gets it? I mean, he's always been a different cat, but I mean, moving forward, how do you think that's going to play out in Stillwater?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the next time, you know, he talks to the media and has to kind of face follow-up questions about what happened. You know, he mentioned OAN in a kind of in an opening statement, unprompted, around the coronavirus during a conference call with reporters back in April. So, you know, again, that wasn't even asked about it. He volunteered it. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, whether there is actual reflection. You know, he did finally apologize on the video on Tuesday, I guess. But, you know, you're right. He's not a guy that typically backs down for much. He's not a guy that feels like he has to fall in line. And I think in some ways it suited him in Oklahoma State, especially because he's an Oklahoma State guy, but it's also – you could probably argue hindered his career in terms of maybe moving on from there because I think people are a little concerned about the way he operates.
Adam, we're all trying to figure out in all these sports, the return to play is just around the corner where a lot more things are going to get cranked up, and we're all trying to figure out what is it going to look like? Well, the college football season, the NFL season has not been normal this offseason. So I'll ask you on the college football front, how do you think – this product is going to look this season? How much do you think in your mind it'll be affected?
Well, I think it's going to be affected. You know, I think the interesting thing is, you know, we're seeing, you know, these positive tests pop up when athletes return to campus. And, you know, I spoke to a team doctor in the Big Ten about this about a week ago, and they were saying how this is kind of expected because people are coming from different parts of the country. I know Kansas State has almost had several series of positive tests because not everybody reported for voluntary workouts at the same time like you had at other programs. So I think now is the key. You have everybody together. You seemingly have more control, even though you don't have control over their behavior 24 hours a day, and they're going to be around other people. They're going to be around other teammates. They're going to be around other students when they return to campus. They're going to be, in some cases, in larger cities or even towns. Other places will be a little bit smaller. So what happens the next time there's testing? Or are we going to see cases pop up during the contact portion of practice, the real portion of practice, which will begin in mid-July? And then is that going to continue happening as we get closer to the season? Because if that does happen, especially if there's larger numbers, then you have to be really concerned about the possibility of a team having to shut it down for a little while if they have 20 or 25 or 30 positive tests. So it's all on the table. I think everybody's trying to manage this the best they can, even though there's not kind of a standardized protocol, a national protocol. Every school's doing it a little bit differently. So that's another factor here. Can we get that standardized protocol for competition? Are people going to feel comfortable having that protocol? And then are we going to have, high numbers of positive tests when we get closer to the season? Because if you do, I was talking with an AD about this last week in the group of five. What is the number? Is it 15? Is it 20? Is it 25? I think anything beyond 25, it's hard to send a team out on the field for a number of weeks, and that's going to be a major disruption, obviously.
Boy, very complicated stuff. And, you'd hate to think about it, right? You always hope, Adam, that, it'll work out. You get down there, you do the right things, and some of these programs have been dealt already the first challenge. And I guess we knew it was inevitable, right? Isn't that fair to say? We nobody thought that when you started coming back that you wouldn't have anybody test positive. So the question is, can they maneuver through these challenges, as you pointed out? But, man, you can probably make the case that it's going to be really, really difficult. It's only going to get tougher from here, as you just sort of laid out.
Right, exactly. And, I think a lot of administrators and coaches and folks in the program wanted to get these guys back because they felt they could have more control over where they're going to be and what they're going to do. And they're going to obviously give them instructions as far as what they can do to prevent themselves from getting the virus. But, they'll say that in the same breath, we can't be with them 24 hours a day. And what's going to happen when dorms open? What's going to happen when some students return to campus and they're going to have those interactions? Is it still going to be easy to control, or is it going to be more difficult? So I think it's certainly a concern that you're seeing these tests. And, I know Houston had to stop their workouts already, but is that going to be happening again in July? Is that going to be happening again in August? If the answer is yes, then I think you have to look at the season, not maybe nationally, but certainly in different areas, being at risk, having to change significantly because of those results that are continuing to pop up.
Boy, so many things that I know you're following. Adam Rittenberg is with us from ESPN covering college football. Give us your thoughts on what has gone down at Iowa and how they have handled themselves with the challenge that they had with their strength coach, Chris Doyle. So he's out, but how do you think that they handled that situation?
Well, I think you had to make that move if you're Iowa, and you had to do it quickly because of the number of allegations and the number of former players that really targeted the strength program with their concerns and their experiences that they shared publicly. But it's far from over. There's still a number of players that have grievances, especially involving head coach Kirk Ferentz. You have an outside law firm that's going to be looking into this over the next few weeks and talking to people who have come forward. It doesn't seem like the majority of folks who have spoken out are demanding that Ferentz is removed, but there's certainly others beyond Chris Doyle that are implicated here. And again, the one thing that's very hard to come to grips with is when Ferentz said, "I didn't know what was happening," or I had blind spots, or "this is all news to me," because of the way that program, like many, is set up, where the head coach and the strength coach are number one and number two in terms of importance and power in that program. I mean, Chris Doyle was the highest paid strength coach in the country for a reason, Iowa's program is built on player development. It's built on great in the weight room, and they had results that way. So none of this was, you know, this is all breaking news to you. That's the hard part for a lot of these players and their parents to reconcile involving Kirk Ferentz, even though he may not have been, you know, kind of directly involved in a lot of these allegations.
We're talking to Adam Rittenberg from ESPN. And one thing that we've discussed on this show and I've been paying attention to is NASCAR has slowly started to bring some fans back to their events. They've announced their all-star race at the Bristol Motor Speedway that has held a football game before. They hope to have 30,000 fans in a facility that holds 160,000. So I bring that up because how much do you think that these schools and these conferences will pay attention to that to see how that might pertain to them this fall and possibly bringing fans in?
Well, I think the fans thing, you know, I don't know if it's a misunderstanding, but I think the thought that the schools are going to decide the fans isn't really true, from my understanding. It's A, what does the state say? And then what does your local jurisdiction say as far as large gatherings? And if both of those are saying, okay, you can have these gatherings, the schools are going to find a way to get as many people into their facilities as possible because of the revenue that they would lose otherwise. And so, you know, I live in Illinois, and our governor has been pretty clear, no large gatherings, that would be the last thing that would come back. So we'll see if that's the case in the fall. I know other states are in different positions. So, you know, what is your governor saying? What are your state public health officials saying? And then, you know, I think schools just want to know what's my percentage. And then we have to obviously go about, you know, the social distancing, you know, practices in the stadium. And how are we going to do bathrooms? And how are we going to do concessions? How are we going to do tailgating? Are we going to do temperature checks for everybody that comes in? So I think, again, they're going to see what the guidance is from the state and local levels, and then they'll, you know, kind of adjust accordingly. But it's not as though I think schools are saying, well, we will decide for ourselves that we'll have a full stadium, or we'll decide for ourselves we'll have 50% full. That's not my understanding, at least.
Well, and then the debate becomes, okay, let's say you're a school that holds 100,000. We'll just use that as easy. And so you can have 30,000 in your stadium. So then how do you decide? With pro sports, it's all about, all right, you buy a ticket, you're in, but you have students that you have to consider. And if you're saying that it's safe for them to go on campus and they have to go back to class, are you going to deny them, you know, entry into a stadium? I know some charge student tickets, some don't. So that's then the question of who gets a ticket, who's eligible to get a ticket.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a big story going forward, and there's going to be some very tough conversations, whether it's with the student groups or whether it's with your top donors. What are the suites going to look like? I mean, those are indoor, so in some ways those are riskier than having, you know, a group of people outside, even though you can move around in those suites a little bit more. But are you going to tell your top donors that, hey, you can only come to three games this year? Matt, that's a tough conversation to have if you're an athletic director. So, yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it's configured and who gets in and what type of lottery systems there's going to be or which games, you know, these people can go to and then these people can go to the next one. So, yeah, I just know, like, from talking to athletic directors and others, this has been an incredibly busy time because they're having to prepare for all of these different scenarios, whether it's no fans or 25% or 50%, and then the testing for the athletes and making sure that everybody on the field is virus free, and it's going to be a very difficult logistic season for the entire sport, including this element.
I'll get your opinion on this part too, and this is something that we discussed I guess a few weeks ago. Not all schools, but some have started selling alcohol on campus on game day, you know, inside the stadium. When you look, sure, at social distancing and trying to put those protocols in place, how do you think that it affects that at all? Because let's be honest, you get a few beers in you, you have a little less fear. Maybe you're not thinking about social distancing as much. Do you think that that's a conversation that either is going to be had or has already been had?
Absolutely, and also another thing too. I was talking with an AD about this last week that if you're out tailgating for 4 hours, your body temperature is probably going to go up, and so if there's a temperature check at the door, maybe you don't get in because you register a temperature that's too high. So they're thinking about all these things. That same AD told me that, hey, our menu, and we didn't talk about alcohol, but our food menu is going to be streamlined. You know, we're only going to have the basics. So I think a lot of schools have to think about, you know, can we pull off alcohol? Can we pull off a full menu? I mean, what is it going to be like with the tailgating scene? You have to think about all these elements, you know, and then also think about, well, we obviously want to get as many people in and out safely, because that's going to help our bottom line. And we know that we're going to be losing a lot of money, you know, in the 7-8 figures for most of these departments for the next fiscal year. So it's really having to balance all of those things and thinking through, how are we going to handle alcohol? How are we going to handle tailgating? How are we going to handle bathrooms? How are we going to handle the concessions and the food menu? It's just going to look very different this year, and hopefully it's only this year, than it will, you know, any other year that all of us can remember in this sport.
No doubt about it. A lot of things to sort out. Adam, thank you so much for the visit. We appreciate it as always, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, appreciate you guys. Thanks.
All right, that is Adam Rittenberg, covers college football for ESPN, and we do appreciate his visit. We will come back. More on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase next. Appreciate Adam Rittenberg for joining us. Jeremy Fowler actually has to move up a little bit, so rather than noon, we'll be talking to him here shortly. We'll get into some NFL stuff with Jeremy Fowler. A little bit later, Chris Mason and our conversation with Bob Costas. You're going to want to hear that. Speaking of the NFL, Chase, this is perfect. Man, this is a lot of things Chase-related. I mean, Dale Earnhardt Jr. is going to be in the Hall of Fame, NASCAR Hall of Fame class in 2021.
Heck
now,
yeah.
The wide receiver for the Dallas Cowboys, Amari Cooper, is 26 years old today. So if you would like to sing happy birthday to him, please don't do that. He becomes one of seven players in NFL history. They've been around how long? I don't think they've ever talked about that. You guys know?
Is it 100 years?
Did you look that up?
I didn't.
100 years.
I'm going to miss
NFL history. One of seven players to have 5,000 receiving yards prior to his 26th birthday. Can you guys name the other six receivers?
Well, when in doubt, Jerry Rice.
Give me the parameters one more time.
He becomes the seventh wide receiver in NFL history to have 5,000 receiving yards prior to his 26th birthday. He turns 26 today. So there are six other guys, along with Amari Cooper, that have 5,000 or more receiving yards this early in their career. It's never been done other than the six other guys. So I'm asking you guys, who are the six other guys?
I would have thought. Would you guys have thought that number would have been higher?
A little.
Well,
I think I would have guessed that number would be a little
tell
bit
you
higher.
Why. No. You know why? Because how many years did we always hear it takes the receivers longer to develop? It's like year three is when the receivers are.
True.
How many times did we hear that over the years,
that's
right?
True.
We used to hear
that's
that
true.
All the time. Like, you got to give the receivers time, they got to develop. It's like really year three is when they blossom. Okay, so we're asking. You know, you have to basically, to fit into this category, as we're finding out, you have to come out of the gates running as fast as you can, right?
I mean,
you have to be very productive right out of the gates. So Chase leads with, when in doubt, a wide receiver question, Jerry Rice. Survey says,
really?
Okay. First time, when in doubt, go Jerry Rice, it was the wrong answer.
I think that's fair. I think it's always fair to do that. But
by 26, so you've got to average over 1,000 yards per season, right?
Most of them are going to be, what, 22? We're talking about three,
I guess if you came
four
out of school
seasons
early
tops.
And you start when you're 21, you could get an extra season in there maybe, depending on when your birthday is?
I mean, you're
or how
almost,
early you got in?
What are you thinking? 1,200 yards probably is what you need to average to get to hit this? In this time
probably.
Frame?
All right, my first guess is going to be Randy Moss, because you've got to remember he lit it up at the beginning.
Randy Moss. What, he did in 98? He did? Oh, that's right. He came here at Vanderbilt Stadium and lit up the then Oilers, Tennessee Oilers. Randy Moss is the guess. Survey says, ding, number one. Randy Moss, number one.
So – Would it be correct to assume that a lot
of
the guys?
No, you never assume. Never. He always leads to bad things.
That's true. That most of the receivers on this list may be newer, closer to this time,
well,
because
that,
of how the offense is.
I don't know
developed.
If I would assume that. I don't know if that, but that's why I thought the number would be higher, Chase, because generally speaking, people throw the ball more now than
yeah.
they did in Jerry Rice's era, even though Jerry Rice holds all the records.
Well, you just said, should
so
you assume it's newer guys? And Willie said Randy Moss, his rookie year was 98, and he was number one.
Well, yeah. Okay. So, I mean, when I say newer, I mean that range. So, 20 years.
Okay, well, just make your guess. I have my next guess ready.
Are you looking for hints?
No.
What are you doing? Are you fishing?
Dez Bryant.
Of course you went with a cowboy. Dez Bryant. Survey says.
No.
No.
All right, my next guess is Julio Jones.
Julio Jones. Boy, that's a good guess. Is Willie on a roll? Survey says. Nope.
What?
No.
Come
Julio
on.
Jones. Nope.
No Julio Jones?
Nope.
Amari Cooper has more receiving
yes.
yards at his age than Julio Jones.
How about that?
T.O.
T.O. Somebody we used to work with who does, would you say he doesn't have B.O. T.O. Terrell Owens? Survey says. No.
Really?
It's a good one, huh?
Yeah. Now, can I ask this? Are they?
Oh, here we go. Fishing.
But they're all wide receivers,
fishing,
correct?
Fishing.
There are no tight ends in this?
No, there's tight ends, Chase. Guess tight ends. Anybody's on the table. Whoever has 5,000 or more receiving yards.
So Tony Gonzalez?
No.
Okay.
That was
no.
a joke. It's not tight
okay,
ends.
Okay. All right. Well, then answer it correctly.
Let me do Chris
sir.
Carter. Come on, man.
It's Chris Carter on that list.
It's not Chris
there
Carter.
There you go. He survey says no, he's not.
Okay. Hey, he ended up with a lot of catches and a lot of yards, but he was not a
no
a guy right out
right
of the
out of the
gates.
That's exactly right.
I'm gonna throw a shot at the dart here. I'm gonna
yeah,
say Anquan Boldin.
Go out there, Marquise.
Anquan Boldin.
Ooh.
He had a good rookie year. I'm just saying. So Anquan Boldin, is he on the list? Man, okay.
All right, I'm going to take one.
There's
gotta,
one
I
guy.
Guess.
I can't believe you guys haven't said. I can't believe it.
Odell Beckham.
How about Torrey Holt?
Torrey Holt.
Okay, I like Marquise's guess.
Odell Beckham.
Odell Beckham. Ding! Number six. By the way, Amari Cooper's
wow.
seven. Odell Beckham, he's on that list and he's seventh. Odell Beckham is six. Randy Moss is one.
Reggie Wayne. Larry Fitzgerald.
Larry Fitzgerald. Going into season 26. Ding!
Oh.
Number three.
Willie, anyone else?
Marvin Harrison.
What? If he didn't run out of bounds every time he caught the ball, he would have had more yards.
He could have had more yards. Yeah, maybe he's a little short.
How could you guys not guess Calvin Johnson?
Calvin Johnson. Yes.
He's not on the list, though. I thought for sure that would be like the first guess.
He's not on the list.
I thought for sure you guys would say Calvin Johnson, like the first guess, not on the list.
All right, Steve, so how many
Steve
are we
Smith.
Missing? We're missing two?
You've got Randy Moss, one, Larry Fitzgerald, three, Odell Beckham, six, Amari Cooper, seven. So you're missing, what, two, four, and five?
Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I was thinking him and him. Steve Smith. Andre Reed.
No.
AJ Green.
Ooh. I don't
This is a good one, right?
This is really good.
This is a good one. Tim Brown.
You got to think. You got to have yards now.
Tim Brown, Hall of Famer.
No way. I think it's got to be more modern where you're racking up big yards.
This one's difficult.
I'm stumped.
Brandon Marshall?
Okay.
Brandon Marshall's not a bad guess.
Michael Irvin.
No way.
Yeah.
They just didn't throw it that much.
I'm just naming wide receivers at this point.
Chad Johnson. Chad Ochocinco.
Ding! No.
Right, I'm going to have to – I'm not going to cheat, but I'm going to look at a list of wide receivers just so I can come up with –
Oh, I did that a long time ago.
Did you?
I've just been
off the top of my head here.
So, by the way, Chase has been looking at a list, and we have 19
and
buzzer sounds.
All these, like, Hall of Famers and Willie guessed Torrey Holt, didn't he?
Yeah.
I guessed Torrey Holt. So, well, let's go with the other guy.
No. Did you just cut out Isaac? Did you say Isaac Bruce?
Yes.
Yeah.
Andre Johnson.
Hines Ward. Keyshawn Johnson. DeSean Jackson.
Santonio Holmes.
The whiff. We are whiffing.
Eventually, you guys will run out of receivers.
I know this isn't right, but for giggles, Derek Mason.
Dude, he didn't become a receiver until he was like 5 years
in. Come on.
I know.
We know D. Mace's story. You know D. Mace's story better than that.
That's why I said
like
I know
the
it's
first
not right.
Three years were special teams. Basically.
Come on.
Come on, man.
We're digging our
I was
going
to say, you are. You're getting further. You're cold. We're playing the warm. You're cold. Freezing cold.
DeAndre Hopkins.
Exactly.
DeAndre Hopkins. Ding!
There you go, Chase. We're back on track.
I got one. Mike Evans.
Mike Evans.
Ding!
Number two. Mike Evans. Number two. Hopkins, number four. You'll never get five, ever. We could play this game till the end of the show.
Is he active?
And you still wouldn't get it.
Stephon Diggs.
He is active?
Wrong. I just gave you the ultimate hint, and you still won't get it.
Demaryius Thomas.
He's active, though?
Yep.
T.Y. Hilton.
Emmanuel Sanders.
Golden Tate.
Demaryius Thomas.
I said that already.
We did already say that.
Edelman? No. Keenan Allen. Randall Cobb.
Struggle bus. Struggle bus.
Michael Crabtree.
Safe to say, you guys, this was a good one, right?
This was good.
Right?
Jarvis Landry.
Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, I was never.
Yeah, I was
exactly.
Never.
Exactly. You were never going to get that. Ugh. We could have played this game till 2 o'clock. You could have been looking at current rosters, and I don't think you would have named him.
We could have, still be going at 2 o'clock, and then hear Brandon Cooks.
By the way, he's fourth on that list, and he's been on. What's he on, his fourth team?
Somebody just. I kid you not. Somebody texted in. Andrew texted in and said Brandon Cooks.
There you go. Or he's fifth on the list. Sorry, fifth on the list, and maybe he's on his fifth.
Where's
team.
Michael Thomas? That's a good one. Did we guess him?
Not on there. Michael Thomas, not on there. Didn't he play like the first couple years behind Brandon Cooks? That's why. Brandon Cooks took away some of his stuff the first couple of years.
I'm glad you said active because we were getting real.
We were getting deep
into the rosters. We were going to start naming like Braylon Edwards and just all kind of just random
about
wide
to break
receivers.
Out Musa Muhammad.
There were 86 misses in that contest, so that wasn't bad. Not bad. We got our list though. Randy Moss, Mike Evans, Larry Fitzgerald, DeAndre Hopkins, Brandon Cooks, Odell Beckham, Amari Cooper. Only guys in NFL history to have 5,000 or more receiving yards by their 26th birthday.
Baseball was going to be back before we finish that.
Whew. Okay, we'll towel off. We'll come back, talk a little NFL
towel
with
off.
Jeremy. Yeah, that was a lot of sweating. That was tough.
That was bad.
Felt like we just ran
my
a marathon.
My rib cage is hurting from all the swings and misses we had.
We'll come back with Jeremy Fowler. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Wednesday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. A little bit later, our conversation with Bob Costas. You'll hear that coming up just around the corner. Jeremy Fowler is now on the line with us. We're going to talk a little NFL with him. Jeremy, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm doing better than my two co-hosts. We had a fun game talking about Amari Cooper and his 26th birthday, joining six other receivers in NFL history with 5,000 or more receiving yards prior to their 26th birthday. And let's just say they didn't do well. It was not what you would expect to be on that list of only seven guys to do it in NFL history. Obviously, it's a little bit more slanted toward modern guys because of the offenses, but nonetheless, it was a fun game. When you look around the league right now and you see how things have changed, and everybody has tried to devalue the running game, but yet think about some of the success last year in the league, the Titans being one of them, a team that could run the football, and the Rams, when they got to the Super Bowl, running the football, the Ravens were very good running the football, yet we tend to always gravitate and talk about passing and the receivers.
Yeah, so, I mean, you look at running backs, and really Derrick Henry is one of five top 10 backs right now that are looking for a new contract, right? And they have good reason to want a big deal because they carry their teams in a lot of spots. So, you know, you can still win with running backs. The question is, do you want to pay them because you know there's so many good ones out there that you can potentially replace them with? But, yeah, it's an era right now where you have at least 12 high-end running backs around the league, guys that are elite. And so, it changes the game. And so it's such a good position that even you look at a guy like Christian McCaffrey, everybody thinks is the top guy. But there really are six guys that you could say are the best in the league, and you wouldn't be wrong, and Henry is one of them.
Yeah. How would you handle it if you were John Robinson, the general manager for the Titans? What would you do with Derrick Henry? How would you handle the situation?
So, I would find a sweet spot. Christian McCaffrey, $16 million a year on his new deal is probably an outlier. Considering he does so much in the passing game and Henry doesn't do as much, not that he can't do it, but I think most don't consider him a natural threat in, say, the slot, you know. But the problem is that $10 million franchise tag is too low. Henry would be insulted if he took a long-term deal at $10 million per year. He'd probably rather play that out and hit free agency the year after. But so you come to a sweet spot, maybe $12 or $13 million, so, you split the difference, find something in the middle that accommodates the player, knowing that your locker room would probably have a revolt if he didn't at least try to pay this guy, who clearly put the team on his back at times at the end of the year. So you got to reward some of that while protecting yourself as well. And I think there's a way to do that for both sides.
Good point. We've talked about it this week, and obviously not knowing whether he can play or not. But let's just go on the premise for the sake of this discussion. Colin Kaepernick, after all these years off, could play in the league. With everything that's going on and what the commissioner said this week, do you think there's a real shot he's on a roster at least in training camp, Jeremy, here in a month or two?
You know, I'm not totally convinced of that yet because it's still up to teams to decide that they need a player like that, and they haven't done that with Cam Newton, who's probably the better player right now just based on pedigree and winning MVP, and no teams are signing him either. So I don't know that Kaepernick's going to jump the list there unless the league comes together and says collectively this guy needs to be in the league based on what's happened nationally in the last month or really in the last 4 years since Kaepernick first knelt. And so you're dealing with a lot of dynamics there. I've talked to some people around the league, some execs who say there are a few fits for him that make sense, the Chargers being one and the Titans being one. You have a lot of play action with an athletic quarterback in Ryan Tannehill. You don't have the strongest quarterback room as far as 1 through 3, so you could probably seamlessly put Kaepernick in there. Titans ownership has been out front saying, that they support the Black Lives Matter cause and all that's associated with that. So that makes sense on certain levels to bring a guy like that in. There aren't many others. You look at even teams that are a dearth at quarterback talent like Washington, Jacksonville, they haven't really been eager to add to their quarterback room for the most part. So there aren't a lot of options, but there are a few, and we'll see if those shake out. It could be a situation where he just waits a little bit to see if somebody gets hurt. Cause I don't know that he wants to be backup. He probably wants to play and have a chance to start.
Yeah, that's what's interesting. I brought up the conversation on Monday saying if he could play, wouldn't it make sense for the Titans to be interested in him as a backup to Tannehill? You brought up Jacksonville. We're trying to figure out if they're pulling the Miami move of last year where, you know, you had the tanking for Tua. Is this Jacksonville's ploy to suck for Trevor Lawrence? I mean, it does not look like they've put together a very competitive roster.
Yeah, they've been hard to figure out. They're kind of done. I would say yes, it's tilting that way, but it's so hard to do that in the NFL. We saw that with the Dolphins, right? I mean, they ended up getting their guy in Tua. But in the NFL, it simply is hard to tank. It's a hard thing to do. There's just so many different dynamics. You have guys competing out there. Even when you trade away a lot of draft picks, you still have a chance to win. Jacksonville's in a spot where they still have some pretty good players in the stock, to be honest, especially on defense. You know, they're not as loaded as they once were, but there's still some talent there. So, they're going to be at the bottom end of the league. But if they won five games, it wouldn't shock me either, to be honest. So, Doug Marone's a good coach. I mean, there's a lot of factors there beyond just tanking, but I think they figured, hey, we have to reset our locker room. We had a lot of good talent, but we had a lot of bloated contracts, and we had a lot of players that were not happy or good fits here. That's why they've looked into trading Yannick Ngakoue and Leonard Fournette. You know, they're trying to kind of cleanse the culture there, and that takes time.
We're talking to Jeremy Fowler of ESPN. A conversation I had earlier, Jeremy, when looking at this season, I think it's easy to say Kansas City, Baltimore, those two teams are at the top of the league. But when you look at the AFC, what team do you identify as the third behind those two? Or can you easily do that at this point?
Gotcha. So the NFC, you're saying who's
the AFC
behind the 49ers? Oh, AFC, I'm sorry. So you got the Chiefs, of course. And who's your second?
Baltimore.
So, man, there got to be a few surprises up there, the teams that will emerge. I like the Bills. I really do. I think they're a team that has one of the best pound-for-pound rosters in the NFL, along with New Orleans and some others, and it's going to come down to the quarterback and what they can do. I'm not about to disrespect the Titans either based on the run they made. You know, they missed a few pieces, but the core remains intact. They've rebuilt that thing pretty well. Mike Vrabel has them believing. You have a good formula where you still don't have to ask Ryan Tannehill to win games for you or to carry the team. You just have to make plays vertically. I mean, A.J. Brown and Jonnu Smith, I mean, you could argue by the end of the year they'll be top 10 at their position, at each position. You know, that makes they have that talent. And so it's going to be this is a team that certainly is on the rise, even from what they did last year. I like Tennessee and I like Buffalo.
So Tennessee and Buffalo. And what led us into that conversation was Lamar Jackson coming out and saying that they may have underestimated the Titans. And whenever you have a run like Tennessee had last year going to the AFC Championship game, I mean, it's easy to say they flew under the radar. They're not going to do that as much now. But as this roster, based on everything you just said, as this roster is currently constructed, do you still think they need an additional piece like Clowney or somebody else to put them over that hump, or are they in your mind the favorite in the AFC South?
They could use one more guy. I mean, up front, I think you could use one more. I like some of the pieces they've added, but I don't know that they have enough guys up front in that base defense to scare you. I mean, Vic Beasley's a good signing in that it's relatively low risk. I mean, it's high money, but it's a short-term deal, and you give him a chance to kind of reboot his career for a guy who once led the league in sacks. But he's hardly a slam dunk at this point. You know, Jeffrey Simmons, you're going to expect a lot from. So I like some of the pieces, but they could use one more guy to rush the passer for sure. And I think that's why, and they know it, and that's why they've been involved with Clowney. But this is a guy who's coming off of a season of just a few sacks. So they're not going to pay $18 million a year for that guy. They're just not going to do it. And that's smart. But you hang tight and see if he'll take, somewhere in that $12 to $15 million range, and you try to add. I mean, Everson Griffin's still out there. He comes from more of a 4-3 system, but that's a guy that can get to the quarterback and has always been able to do that. So still some options out there that you can, fool around with. And I think at the end of the day, they'll end up adding somebody between now and, say, late August.
Talking to Jeremy Fowler from ESPN. And, Jeremy, as you can imagine, we've been kicking this around for a long time, and it looks like all signs point to this still being out there for another few weeks before Clowney actually does sign with somebody. You mentioned Everson Griffin. I guess our listeners are probably not nearly as familiar with him, but we're looking for other options, right? So can you illustrate any other options and how that would compare to somebody like Clowney, who, of course, in our area, most people have been watching him since college, so we know very much about him. But those plan Bs, I would have to imagine John Robinson has some alternatives to try to fill that spot if they don't land Clowney.
Yeah, you'd have to, at that point, try to go for a kind of a hybrid option or somebody who could be a matchup help in, you know, a multiple defense. Like, you know, Marcus Golden is probably a pretty good number two pass rusher, right? The Giants have tendered him as an unrestricted free agent, but another team can get involved and negotiate. Maybe that's somebody you get in to help. And so, you know, Griffin comes to mind. You don't, in this climate, you're probably not going to try to trade for a Yannick Ngakoue or any of those guys on the franchise tag. You know, the money just doesn't make sense, and they're not, like, solidified top five guys, so it just doesn't make a lot of financial sense to make that kind of move. And otherwise, there aren't a lot of players out there that can help off the edge right now. I mean, most of them have been paid. That's why Clowney is still kind of stuck out there like a sore thumb, and why I still think Tennessee is in that mix.
Jeremy Fowler is with us. So I noticed you put out there about the what Cleveland's thinking is right now with Myles Garrett. I think some people would find this interesting. We all have the same thing pop into our mind, that awful incident that took place at the end of the game against the Steelers. But the guy is an immense talent. We were just talking about the importance of edge rushers. So it looks like they're in some talks, perhaps, on how to lock him up long term.
Yeah, you know, this is a player that's probably a top five pass rusher in the league. 2 years left on his rookie deal, and you count the fifth-year option, so they can save some money there actually by getting ahead of things and trying to sign him now, using those 2 years to soften the blow of the future contract and spread it out over a per-year basis. And so the Browns have the luxury of having a player like Olivier Vernon, a good pass rusher, but he's on the books for $15-plus million in salary cap money. He's in the last year of his deal. You could cut him for no cost if you wanted to. So you can either do that to try to save up for signing Myles Garrett, or you can sign Garrett and then just switch out Clowney with Vernon. Or you can keep Vernon, who's still a good player and might be, in some cases, better than Clowney, pound for pound. And so, you know, they have options financially, and so they can make this work. I think that's why they're trying to swing for a home run a little bit. And they also have Denzel Ward, Baker Mayfield. We have a lot of good players coming up in the pipeline. The Browns figure, hey, we finally have a good nucleus of good players. We need to pay them.
Jeremy, last thing for me, that we're all, I think, trying to look on the horizon and figure out how leagues are going to try to get through, you know, whether it's a college football that we're talking about, the NHL, which is in our town. You know, we've talked baseball. They've got obvious issues. But when you go through this period where we know that the revenues are going to go down with number of people you can let in. How do you think the NFL is, and I saw you tweeted on this, you know, how well are they equipped to go through in terms of the salary cap, the revenues, this dip that we're going to see, if in fact they have to go through a season without full capacity of fans?
Well, the goal right now is to try to soften the blow of losing $40, $45 million in salary cap money per team next year, because they've projected already through the Players Association and the NFL that $3 billion could be the magic number here of lost money if there are no fans in the stands. You split that in half because the players get about 48% of the total revenue that goes into the cap, and, you know, you're looking at that going from 200 to about 160 next year real quick. And so the league is working on ways to borrow from future years, because you're under an 11-year CBA right now. The money is supposed to be outrageous between the 17-game season coming, gambling money. I mean, we're talking the cap could, in a normal climate, go up to $300 million here in the next, I don't know, 6 to 10 years. And so it doesn't really hurt you all that much to take 40 of that, move it into 2021. And so, I think that's what they'll end up doing. I also think there's probably a way to split this in half and have a partial capacity fan base in your stadiums. I mean, you know, between masks and temperature checks, I do think there's a way to do that. suites in stadiums are pretty well protected. You can put 6 to 8 people in a suite, and it doesn't really expose them to anybody else for the most part. You can distance people. You can charge extra for tickets. I mean, the league's looking at every creative way, and teams are looking at this too, every way to just increase that bottom line just a bit and soften the blow from what could be an ugly year.
No doubt about it. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Jeremy, thank you so much for the visit as always, and continue to be safe. We'll talk to you down the road.
Hey, thanks, guys. Anytime.
Take care. That is Jeremy Fowler. Does a great job covering the NFL for ESPN, and we do appreciate him joining us. We'll kind of get into some of the things you just heard there. Pretty interesting hearing him lay out kind of the landscape of the AFC, and we'll talk about that on the other side to start up the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase. ESPN 102.5, The Game.
L-E-T-E-N-P-C. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 100% match on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.